Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher Podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where your dreams can find a voice. Throughout our lifetimes, our hearts are tested by adversity. But it's during those times that we are broken open by love and beauty. Nature and our community can be instrumental in awakening us to a sense of wonder and to the treasure of being alive. These are some of the themes that my guest, Terry Helwig, uncovers in her new book, Shifting Shorelines, A Message from a Wiser Self. Terry Helwig is an award-winning author. Her wise, lyrical, and heartwarming prose reveals a deep thinker who finds meaning and correlation between both her inner and outer worlds. A naturalist at heart with a master's degree in counseling psychology, Terry says nature and synchronicity have been two of her most profound teachers. Join me for this heartwarming conversation with Terry, where we go in depth into how we can understand our lives better when we look at it through the lens of natural phenomena and synchronicities in nature. We also discuss the importance of finding and bonding with our tribe. If you like what you heard, please don't forget to like, rate, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Thanks. Hello, Terry. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad to meet you to talk about your new book, Shifting Shorelines, Messages from a Wiser Self. This book, I just have to say, is so beautifully written. And I love the poetic and reflective approach that you took on some of life's most profound and important questions. So I just wanted to acknowledge that right from the get-go.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Celine. It isn't out quite yet, so it's nice to get a reaction to it before it comes out. So thank you.
Yeah, of course, of course. So Terry, let's start out by talking about your background, because you had an interesting one. I read that you describe yourself as a naturalist at heart, and you say that nature has had a very profound impact on you, that has been one of your biggest teachers. So tell us, how did you develop such a strong connection with nature?
Well, as you know, Shifting Shorelines is pretty much all about nature. And I think I had something in my soul that maybe Wendell Berry talks about. He's a nature poet, and it's the peace of wild things. And ever since I can remember, I loved being out of doors. And as a matter of fact, my mom used to say that I just loved to go out and sit in the dirt and, play in it. And I remember as a young girl smelling the rain on the earth. I was just very aware of that. And then my grandmother, she took me into the garden. And when I started becoming aware of things, I realized that you could put this seed into the ground and it would grow into a vine and flowers and cucumbers that we would pickle. And so I just thought, Mother Nature, she's awesome. She's awesome. And I had a rather troubling childhood. And so my mother was not present sometimes. And we call her Mother Nature, and nature really did become like my mother. I spent hours and hours in my grandfather's tree out in the field, and I spent so much time there that he told me when he died he was going to will me the tree.
That's just so beautiful. So in a way, it offered you solace. It was that steady presence in your life when everything else was really, you know, you didn't have that surety with other aspects of your life.
No, I did not. I moved. I went to 12 different schools growing up.
12?
12. I lived in so many different places. You know, we'd move sometimes. One time it was three times in 1 year. Every once in a while we would stay at somewhere for 2 years. But what was constant in all of that was the land, nature, the sky. I love the Mary Oliver. I love a paragraph that she has called Sleeping in the Forest. And this is how I felt. It says, I thought the earth remembered me. She took me back so tenderly, arranging her dark skirts, her pockets full of lichens and seeds. And so that was my continuity as I moved around. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's lovely. Where is it from again? It's from
it's Mary Oliver. Poem called Sleeping in the Forest. She has beautiful poetry and a lot about nature.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us, Terry. So
for sure.
A recurring message in the book is that nature is a reflection of the cycles and rhythms that we go through in our own life. Could you please explain your thoughts on that?
Okay. Well, the first one that comes to mind that seems very obvious is the cycle of the moon. It's a woman's cycle. You know, the moon becomes
really full.
It's a woman's cycle. And that's the reason the moon's considered very feminine. One of the reasons. Mm-hmm. The cycle, there's always like an inhale and an exhale. That's what I call it, because you have the tides that come in, the tides that go out, the day that breaks, the day that goes to sleep. And that's what happens in life. We're born, we mature, we die. And so it talks to this great circle of life about birth and rebirth, spring, winter. In Ecclesiastes, I love how it says, for everything, there's a season, you know, a time to plant, mm-hmm. a time to eat, a time to be born, a time to die. And on the solstices and equinoxes, I just feel so in rhythm with those times of year. And when our day gets longer and our hours of daylight shrink, it's a rhythm that seems to happen in me as well. And so I think nature teaches us about a connection with something that's larger than ourselves, but we can see it reflected in her.
Sure.
And, you know, indigenous cultures, they
I was going to say, I was just going to say, it's like you read my thoughts because, you know, ancient tribes and indigenous cultures, they were very much in tune with these cycles and they had a lot of rituals that's centered on these.
Absolutely. One of them that I love is like the Tewa Pueblo out in New Mexico. They have a lot of races and things, but when they do that, they really believe that they're massaging Mother Earth when they run up on her. And I just think that is so beautiful and then very much in cycle with the seasons, with, you know, some cultures believed in praying the sun up, that was their job to pray the sun up. But, and I know I'm using some quotes, but I love these quotes. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, nature is loved by what is best in us. And so I think loving nature brings out, you know, our best sense of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you have any practices of your own that you follow, you know, so that you kind of stay in tune with these cycles? Is there, I'm sure you have a couple of them, but would you mind sharing one with us?
For sure. I have one that I call my moon calendar, and I do write about that in the book, but it's this antique bowl that I got from Greece, and I filled it up with sand. And then I have a dial that's on there that I can move around the bowl. And then I placed shells little shells for every day of the month. And so every morning when I go to look outside, that's the first thing I do is to go out and see how the ocean's doing, because I can see it. And I move my dial one shell. And that way I always know, it is the moon waning? Is it waxing? You know, when's going to be the full moon? I might schedule I always like a morning walk around 6:30 when the moon is just full moon is setting. And you can see that along the water because I'm on the West Coast. So those are just some of the ways that I do it.
Okay. Yeah. We're having less and less of that, you know, with the younger generation, because we're living in the digital age. I think we're losing that connection with nature. And I think, you know, we need reminders that, you know, we can find a sense of connection and a sense of self by just spending more time out there and observing all these natural phenomena.
So agree with that, Celine. When my daughter was in high school, I'm so glad that she did adventures out in nature, and it was a program that she did. And she came back as a young teenager, and it was just words that a mother would love to hear. She was sitting on a mountain, and they were in the backcountry for a good week, maybe 2 weeks. I forget exactly how long. And she was looking out on this vista, and she said with tears in her eyes, she said, "Mom, I found myself out there." Oh. And I was just, oh, you know, a mother loves that. But that's what nature can do for someone. That's what nature did for her.
Yeah. And I'm sure you modeled that to her, and she probably, you know, she got her cue from you.
Well, we had a lot of picnic under trees, I'll tell you that. Yeah. There's a little Thoreau in me, I guess. And she and I did walk around Thoreau's Walden Pond before.
Okay. Okay. Mm. Great. So I want to read a line from your book. It's so beautiful, and I want all our listeners to hear it. The dance of perpetual tides changed the contour of our lives, continually shifting the shoreline of who we are, and more importantly, who we will become. So, I mean, this is so rich with symbolism. Could you explain some of them to us, like some of the symbols that you used here?
Yes. I divide the book up into three sections that mirror the tide. And so the first section is ebb tide. And the ebb tide is when the water goes out and we are going to have low tide. And I liken that to times in our life. It's times of loss. It's a time of receding, a time of grief. And these tides, they're shifting. They're shifting all the time, and they're carving out who we are and who we become. And so after the ebb tide, then there's the tide that's just still, you know, it's the slack tide, and the movement is neither in nor out. And I compare that to times in our lives when we're just at peace, when we're not struggling, we're just being, you know. And those are beautiful, quiet times in our life. And then we have the flood tide, and that's when the waters rush in. And those are kind of the epiphanies that we experience in life, and the fullness that we feel. And the thing about life is that you just don't have these once. It's a rhythm. It goes out, it, you know, and then it comes in and it goes out. And just like the shoreline that I've watched, I've walked this beach now for 40 something years that I live upon. And I've seen it take sand to this part of the island and that part, and recede and go out. And so it's shifted the shoreline over the years, just as I have been shifted inside.
Oh, wow. I mean, that is so true. I was just thinking that a lot of people find find the tie, the second tie that you mentioned, the one where it kind of recedes and it's still, they find it difficult to deal with that because it feels like nothing's happening. And then everything is, you know, there's a lack of momentum, or there's a perceived lack of momentum. And I think that is something that people have a tough time. At least I do. I know I do. And I don't, those lulls can be misconstrued for being like that nothing's happening, that, you know, we're kind of going back, we're regressing.
Yes. And that's what, when the movement of life, that's very important for us to have patience in this place that you're talking about, because the shift from this huge thing receding to going forward, it takes a while, and there's all these subtle shifts. I think there's the poem by Neruda that says that he was wading in the deep and his boat struck something deep. And he said, and I don't think anything happened. And then he says, but maybe everything happened. And so that's what I think is, we just need some patience, because nothing stays static. Nothing stays the same. There's, and nature does teach us that nothing stays the same. There is rhythm. And so that movement will come again.
Okay. Okay. That's beautiful. So I want to talk about, your tribe, your family and friendships have been a huge source of inspiration for you. And, you know, I'm just curious to know, how has having these special bonds in your life, how's it impacted you? And what has it taught you about the importance of finding community and a tribe, people who really get you?
Well, I was the oldest growing up of, actually, I'm the oldest of seven sisters. One sister was a sister that didn't, you know, she was my father's daughter and is 18 years younger than I am. So I did not spend a lot of time in the house with her. But the other six of us, we were just called the girls. That's, you know, we had this collective name. And what was wonderful about belonging to this tribe of sisters, considering the childhood that we had, is that my tribe was able to travel with me. And that was wonderful, from place to place, and a sense of belonging. And since I was the oldest, there was always this feeling of being needed. I wasn't so much nurtured, but I was needed, which is just as important, if not more important sometimes, than being nurtured, I think. And loneliness, it can kill, you know? And so I always, when I would move from place to place, I would just kind of look around and think, I wonder who my new friend is going to be. And when I would find these friends, that's what made life bearable when I was younger, is being able to share this with friends. And that's just carried through. I love friendships, especially female friendships. And I've been part of dream groups. I've started several dream groups in different places that I've lived, and women gather and we work with our dreams. And it's just a sense of belonging. And I think everybody wants to belong and be relevant. And there's this great book out right now called The Mother Tree by Suzanne Simard. And she's a scientist, and she is in the forestry. But what she has found is these trees that we think stand alone and on their own, beneath the surface of the ground, they are interconnected with the other trees and the soil, and they send nourishment to one another. And that's what I think the tribe does. The tribe does. We may stand like a tree, but the tribe is that underpinning beneath the surface that holds us all together.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And also finding people who are like-minded too. Were you able to find that easily? Because you said you moved around a lot, right? You said you, yeah. you went to like 12 schools. So how were you able to find those friendships and nurture them, you know, as time went by?
Well, part of it, I do think it's important for us to find like-minded people, but I also discovered that sometimes love is just getting to know someone, and that we are, you know, it's like if you take the time to spend time with someone, especially like in some of the groups I was in, it might not be somebody I would have normally gone out and sought a relationship with, but when you get to know them and you hear their story and you find out how people are so much more alike than different, in my opinion, when you get to know them. And basically deep down, we all kind of want the same things. We want security and safety and love and belonging. And so that's what a tribe can offer too. But it is wonderful when you kind of get with somebody that like vibrates at your same frequency. That's what I call that, like-mindedness. And so I have a group like that too.
That's wonderful. And where you really can connect on that heart level and be vulnerable with, because that's not easy to find these days. You know, Terry, it's really not.
No, it is not. And I think you touched upon like a critical aspect is vulnerability. And I think it's very difficult to be vulnerable, because to open yourself up and to open your heart like that can also open yourself up to hurt. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's extremely important in a tribe, is being vulnerable, a commitment to be part of the tribe, and having unconditional positive regard for the people in your tribe.
Okay. I mean, for those listening now who are really encouraged by what you say, and like, okay, I want to find people who I can, you know, connect with on such a deep level. Do you have any tips on, you know, where they can find such people?
You know, sometimes
what worked for you?
Pardon?
What worked for you?
Oh, well, I have a group that I meet, the four women that are in my group, and we don't live in the same place. We did cross paths here and there, but we found that we would resonate with each other. And so do you want me to tell about that group, what we did?
I mean, sure. I was actually going to get into that. You actually have a ritual where you practice with your closest friend once a year, and you call this gathering the gift of the day. So let's get into that, and you can tell us a little bit more about how you met them and how you connect with them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and that's what I was getting to, when you find somebody that you really resonate with. And I have found people through, in this group, it was through someone's writing that I eventually met. It was somebody that attended a workshop that I was leading. And then one of the women was a friend one of the women that I talked about. But we all seemed to really enjoy one another and kind of resonated with one another. And so we live in different states, and we decided, let's meet once a year, and we call it girlfriend vacation. And but what we do is our own work. We bring our work. There are two writers in the group. I'm one of them. And then we have an artist, poet. She's a textile artist, and another woman who leads groups, women's groups. And we've led some groups with her. And I'm meeting them next week for a week up in Asheville, North Carolina. And this will be our 16th year of being together. And so the format for it, and this is a format that any person could modify for themselves. And I think it's a beautiful format for deepening friendship and belonging to a tribe. And the reason I call it the gift of the day is what we decided. There are four of us in our group. And so we give one day to each member of our group. And I can use my day any way that I want to. I can say when we'll start meeting, when we'll break for lunch, if we're going to, cook dinner or go out for dinner. But the most important thing is they kind of listen me into being. They will listen to whatever's on my mind, wherever I am psychologically, wherever I am creatively, wherever I am professionally. And what we do is hold that space and container for the person whose day it is. And so they brainstorm ideas about writing or trying out, new themes or what chapters must speak to you. Or I know we were trying to figure out the last meeting I had. It was like, I'm not really sure the title of my book. I've been playing with this idea and this idea. And one of the women said, well, read what some of your chapters are. And so I was reading them out and I had a chapter called Shifting Shorelines. And they're going, oh, that's it. That's it. So it was beautiful that they helped me come up with something like that. And we'll do, we'll listen to if somebody's had a loss or if somebody's going through a difficult time, we'll support them in that. And it's just a beautiful arrangement. Now, I realize not everybody has the luxury of spending, it's really 6 days when you count the two travel days, of doing that. If you do, it is fabulous. But if you don't, you could do it with some girlfriends over a weekend and somebody takes a morning that's all hers. It's basically you listen and you respond as she would want you, if she wants feedback. Or it could even probably be done like you gather in for so many hours and somebody gets uninterrupted time to say what's ever on her heart or in her mind. And so that's the way we've done it. And it's been a very beautiful, vital part of my tribe.
Yeah. I mean, just listening to you, I'm just having all these feel good vibes going around, if we could find people like that in our lives, I mean, who needs therapy, right? I mean, if you could.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of like it could be good therapy too. Yes.
And it's great that you can have this creative exchange with them as well, where, they can give you ideas, you can bounce off certain ideas that you have for your projects. And I think that's just fabulous that you have people like that you can do that with.
Yeah, it's truly a gift. And again, to go back to your question about how do you find these people, I guess you could, you might find them as, I know I found a very good friend when I just went to a yoga class, and over a couple of years, we just really became close. I think you pick them up, you collect them like seashells, perhaps. They're really beautiful ones, and then do your little gathering.
What I find is that people change and they evolve. And I think that's where the challenge comes in trying to stay in sync with each other. And I think having that regular ritual helps you stay in touch with each other and kind of connect and reestablish that bond that you have. I think that's really key.
I think you're absolutely right on that. And part of probably the major thing that makes this work is our commitment to it. We have to set aside a week every year from some very busy schedules. It's not always easy to do.
Yes.
But we have to commit to that. And when you commit to that, and like I said, love is getting to know. You get to know these women on their deepest level and what's going through their heart and this stage of life. And we've been through a lot of stages in these 16 years. And so with COVID, we didn't meet last year, except we were so committed that we said, all right, we're going to have our session on Zoom and we're going to do it over 4 days. And so 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon was the gift that we gave to each of the women. And we committed to that. And that was, it wasn't quite as good as being together, but it was quite wonderful to be able to do during COVID.
Yeah. Yes. And I think commitment, that's the key, right? To be able to really say, okay, I'm going to invest in these friendships because it means so much to me. And these ladies mean so much to me. I really want to be there for them. And I think that's what will keep you together.
I agree totally. And like you said, being afraid to be vulnerable, it's very safe to be vulnerable because it is a sacred space and we keep, you know, each other's confidences and stuff like that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's definitely inspired me. Well, I have a couple of girlfriends, but I feel like I need to definitely meet up with them more often. So yeah. And I'm sure that the listeners will be like, yeah, I need to give her a call or give him a call.
Well, that's what I encourage my daughter. She with her college girlfriends. And I told her, I said, and there's four of them again, maybe there's five, but anyway, they were very close in college. And I just have encouraged her all along, take that time to go see them because they don't live in the same places. And I said, the thing you're going to find out, because I pointed to myself, I said, if you all keep doing this and are committed to this, you're going to be like my group, you know, 20 years, 25 years down the road. And it's sisters that you choose. That's what they turn into, sisters that you choose. So they're making a real effort. And I'm glad to see that because it's hard. It is hard.
It is hard. It truly is. And especially when you get so bogged down by everyday life and your daily, you know, the daily schedules and, you know, you can just kind of lose touch with your connections.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And it's, you know, with social media, that's a way that you're in touch, but that face-to-face interaction, there's no substitute for it, I don't think.
I totally agree with you. Thank you for reminding us that, Terry. We really need it. Well, you know, it's been such a joy talking to you, Terry. You have such a calming presence.
Thank
you so much for writing this beautiful book, which I'm sure will speak to the hearts of many people out there.
Oh, well, it's just been a pleasure and great job and work that you do. I applaud you. You're welcome.
So Terry's new book, Shifting Shorelines, Messages from a Wiser Self, will be available in all major bookstores and Terry's website, terryhelwig.com. Terry, when is it going to be released?
October 12th, just a couple of weeks.
October 12th. Can they pre-order it?
Yes, it's available for pre-order right now.
Okay, perfect. Anything else you'd like to say in closing, Terry?
Well, I always like to say peace of the falling wave to you.
All right. So you have a wonderful rest of your day out there in sunny Florida.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.
Okay.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.